Welcome to ALSB's Pedagogy Podcast. Hear from Academy of Legal Studies and Business International teachers and scholars as to tips, tricks, and lessons learned in the classroom and beyond. ALSB focuses on the fields of business law, legal environment, and law-related courses outside of professional law schools. Hosted by ALSB's Teaching and Pedagogy section. This is Eric Sater. Welcome aboard to a special episode that aligns well this February with Black History Month. We are not talking about history so much as the current and the history we'll be making for the future with ALSB's newest section, the Black Faculty section. We are going to listen and learn from esteemed members of this section, a group of the Academy, where faculty focus on the needs of faculty of color and the role that our home institutions and the ALSB can have in promoting those needs. Today's episode will focus on the Black experience of faculty members, but it does acknowledge intersectional interests and inclusion among other identity groupings. Featured guests include Associate Dean Robert E. Thomas out of the Kelly School of Business, Associate Professor Emeritus Don D. Bennett Alexander of Terry College of Business, and Associate Professor Anthony McMullen of University of Central Arkansas. I also give special credit to Aquisha Daniels, Director of Engagement and Impact and Pedagogical Associate Professor of the Gordon Ford College of Business, for helping arrange these guests and spurring this particular topic. A quick additional note, we are having to remove some bells and whistles starting with this episode. Spotify, our main host, has unfortunately removed a lot of the editing tools. Nonetheless, the core content will remain the same. We will have some terrific discussions with terrific people. Just some of those fancy music transitions are going to have to go away, and instead we'll get to the meat and potatoes of the lovely content that we have. All right, I'm excited, and let's go ahead and introduce today's episode.
Hey folks, this is Eric Sater with ALSB's Pedagogy Podcast. We have a special episode today featuring members of ALSB's Black Faculty section as we discuss issues of Black faculty members and other identity groupings within the Academy. We have special guests Professor Don Bennett Alexander, Dean Robert Thomas, and Professor Anthony McMullen joining us today for a discussion about the section and their thoughts more broadly on some of the issues we're facing today. I'll go ahead, and since we have three guests today instead of my usual one, let them introduce themselves a bit more. And so we'll go ahead and start with Don. If you can tell us a bit about, I don't know, your background, how you ended up interested in these issues, and yeah, anything else you'd like to share to get us started here.
Okay. Hi, thank you so much. And thank you so much for asking me. And it's an honor to be here with all of you. I retired in 2021 from the University of Georgia, teaching law in the College of Business for 33 years. And before that, I was at the University of North Florida for 5.5 years, teaching the same thing. And employment law is what brought me into teaching. The person who had been the first head of New York's Public Employee Relations Board wanted to address something that he had seen as an issue when he was head of the Public Employee Relations Board, and that was that the unfair labor practices of based on race and gender were always ignored. So when he retired and went to Florida to teach, he reached out to see if he could have someone who was interested in creating a course like that. That course ended up being employment law. I ended up being the one who took the course. I was working as an attorney at the Federal Labor Relations Authority at the time. And the rest is history. So I ended up writing first textbook in employment law, and it's now going into its 11th edition, and everything up to the international standard on diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. And have an absolute passion for, I never wanted to teach, but absolutely had a passion for it once I got into it and truly understood what I could do that would help my students and help the world, considering that we were sending these students out into the world. So I took it very seriously.
Thanks, Don. Robert, do you want to give us some background?
Sure, Eric. I've been in the Academy ALSB for most of my career. I started off, I think, we're all lawyers here. I've started off, after getting my law degree and practicing for a very short period, I went back, got a PhD in economics, ended up at the University of Michigan, where I was involved in some initiatives, some early initiatives of the precursor to the PhD project, which is one of the foremost movements or initiatives to try to increase the representation of historically marginalized faculty in the business academy. I was involved in that. And then I moved to the University of Florida, spent 30 years there. I've didn't focus on DEI work, but being an African-American faculty member, it is something that if you care about people, you care about your community, you care about communities of all marginalized people, you do some work in. Eventually, the role of assistant dean for DEI came available, and it was one of those, if I don't do it, who will do it? So I took on that role, did it for a few years, experienced some of the early attacks of the anti-DEI initiative, and I got a call from the folks at Indiana University at Kelley School, and they twisted my arm and they said, hey, you could really do a lot here. They showed me that they had a real commitment to DEI work. We call it DEIB. So I packed up my bags and moved north. And here I am.
Robert is at my institution, also the Kelley School of Business. So we are very pleased to have him and is the first other Kelley guest I've had on the episode. So for the show, thanks very much. And lastly, but not least, we have Anthony joining us today. Anthony, go ahead and tell us some about yourself.
Well, sure. I'm currently at the University of Central Arkansas as an associate professor. My career started as a judicial clerk for the Arkansas Court of Appeals. And quite frankly, at the time, I enjoyed that job so much that I envisioned hopping around from judge to judge and possibly just being a lifetime clerk. But at that time, there were several other clerks on the Court of Appeals who had part-time jobs adjuncting, most of them being adjuncts within political science departments at local universities. And being young and not knowing any better, I said, hey, I think I can do that. And so I sent my resumes around, and in January of 2007, found myself on 48 hours notice teaching legal environment of business at the University of Central Arkansas as an adjunct. And the relationship worked out well. I became an emergency hire full time in 2011 and tenure track 2014. And I am not 100% sure, but I believe that I am the first Black tenure faculty from the College of Business at the University of Central Arkansas. My institution certainly has had many Black faculty, tenured Black faculty before me, but I think I'm the first within the College of Business. And a very brief story in trying to confirm that, I asked both my dean and my department chair whether that was the case. Both of them gave responses that I'm very pleased with. The dean didn't know the answer, but he reaffirmed my value at the university. And I can say that one of my blessings being at UCA is that I've always felt welcome within that institution. But my department chair's reaction was, oh, dear God, you were tenured in 2018 and you're the first, and we've been around how long? And I appreciated that as a response as well, because, we're in Arkansas. We've got a significant Black population. And so I appreciated the idea that yes, this is a proud achievement, but yes, it also took this long for it to happen. So assuming that that is an accurate stat that I am the first, I'm happy that that's the case. In addition, I'm also the debate coach there, and I've got some accolades in that area. As it relates to DEI work, I'm kind of falling into this. I've always intellectually and as well as just as far as what I enjoy in the law, I've always been a generalist, which is something that's very useful whenever you're teaching legal environment of business. But I've taken on employment law this semester as a new prep. And Don, I am using your textbook and happy to do so. And so I am finding myself doing more into the study of this so that I can be a useful resource for my students who are also going into this field.
Exactly. Awesome. And unfortunately, I don't think your experience in statistics is all that unfamiliar at a number of institutions still. So hopefully that is changing. I guess we've already started touching on kind of the broad landscape, maybe is a good place to start before we go into the nitty-grit. You all partly came to me as involved through the Black faculty section. Perhaps you can give me some input more broadly on kind of what do you see as the general state of Black faculty in academia? And the need for perhaps a section such as this, and what is the bird's eye view? And then we can maybe drill into some more individual situations that you all can speak at your respective institutions. First, anything, just the general viewers, and anyone can answer this that they want, might want to know who are members or not members of the Academy about Black faculty section and the need and or the hopes for such a section.
Well, I'll jump in on the first part of your question, and I'll let Anthony and Don consider the rest of it. The condition of Black faculty in academia and the Business Academy in particular is, how should I put it, problematic would be saying softly, and crisis would be another term that could be used despite some of the best efforts. I mentioned earlier the PhD project, which goal is to increase the representation. I shudder to think what it would be like if we did not have the PhD project available working. Even with the PhD project, you go to many business schools, there are very few African-American, Latin, Hispanic, American, Native American, just faculty of color, very few, representation is low. Then as you climb the ranks in the tenure faculty into associate, full professor, chair professor, the ranks are very low. At my previous institution, University of Florida, I'm not even sure what that number was. I was an associate professor there. I was tenured. I have no idea how many had gone before me. Here in the Kelly School, I'm a full professor. Mark McCrory, who is the chair of the Business Law and Ethics Department, claims there have been only three full African-American professors here at Kelly, and we think the number of Hispanic Latino professors is comparable or possibly even worse. And this is an institution that embraces and has a passion for diversity. So I shudder to think of what the majority of institutions that do not share the same drive and commitment.
I've been in ALSB since 1982, and at the University of North Florida, where I was before, as well as at the University of Georgia, I have been the only Black faculty member who was tenured, only female who was tenured at the University of Georgia. They hadn't even had another one the whole 33 years I was there. That was not just an instructor, and that was only one person. And we got one more who became tenured. I'm so glad to be able to say now that they have more in the college. I think two, maybe three more this year. But that, you know, has been from years of pushing, both subtly as well as not so subtly, and sitting in meetings and being the lone voice saying, y'all, seriously, we can't do any better than this. You know, can't we beat some bushes somewhere to get people in here? What are you doing? But I've also felt the frustration on the other side, too, sitting on the committees where I have had them reach out to every single, in fact, I didn't even know they had all of these different bars. You know, I knew about the Black bar, the women's bar, Hispanic bar. Well, as it turns out, they've got them for virtually everything. And just doing the work of having them think we need to go broaden our base of who we're looking for. You may not get anything, but at least you will have tried. So, you know, I've seen the frustration sort of on both sides. On the one hand, you can't make people do anything. On the other hand, you know, it doesn't feel good to be the one that's always trying to make people do something too. And it's not like there are not people out there who are capable, you know, but finding them and matching up everything tends to be problematic. And I say everything because one of the things that I have to think about, for instance, at a place like the University of Georgia, is people who may not want to live as close as we are to Atlanta. You know, it's an hour and 15 minutes. I'm going there after I finish this. They just sort of, you know, if you're Black, your idea of where you are, and that's why it matters where you are now as opposed to where you were before, Robert, and where you are too, Anthony. Because Black folk, you know, we can't just go anywhere. I mean, you got to be somewhere where you think you're going to be safe, where you think there's some critical mass, where there's a place for you to get your hair done. I mean, these are legitimate things you have to think about. So for me, when you talk about the state of all of it, I can't just put all the blame out there. I think a big piece of making sure that people feel comfortable to come is done by the university, and whether it's them passing that message on to people who sit on those committees the way I have to do, or if it is making sure that they step up to the plate. One of the things my university decided to do was match folk. I mean, just like they do with anything else, if there's a shortage and people are not, are in real high demand, then you step up to the plate. You're not gonna get them for cheap. You know, I mean, that's just, they're used to doing that with everything else. Why not with this? So I think the state of it has changed dramatically. Well, I would like to say the state of it has changed dramatically in the 42 years that I've been in the academy. But the truth is, I really can't see that. I mean, I can't see it. And if I can't see it, I can't say that. It hasn't at my university. I am glad for all of the changes that have come. But y'all, when we look at the numbers that there are versus the numbers that there are in academia, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, let me just reiterate pretty much everything that Dawn said. First, our numbers at UCA within our College of Business have gotten better. Now, of course, when the starting point is one and when the current point is five or six, yeah, that's an improvement. I can tell you that when you look at our student demographics come pretty close to matching the state of Arkansas. As a regional comprehensive, I think you can almost expect that, and I'm happy to say that. That is not the case for our faculty. For the overall faculty, not just within our College of Business, Black faculty make up 4%, as opposed to about, I want to say last time I looked at the numbers, 17 or 18% Black student population. So the numbers are out of whack. But to Dawn's point regarding getting people to feel comfortable in these places, for me, I am almost a lifelong Arkansan. With the exception of a few years outside of my childhood, this is the only state that I've lived in. So I'm used to navigating all of the different spaces. I was born in the Delta. I went to college at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, high school in a little city called Russellville. Three completely different dynamics that you've got to navigate and almost be a different person as you're navigating all of those spaces. And so I've been in several meetings where we're looking for people, and I have openly asked the question, how much of the fact that Arkansas's reputation, for better or worse, preceding it, has, you know, how much of an impact does that have? And as someone who's deeply ingrained in Arkansas, I'm not the best person to ask that question, but I am fully aware of the reputation that precedes this state. I've had in faculty searches, I've had candidates in our one-on-one ask me either about the politics of the area or of just how's the situation going to be. I recall one person who was a candidate for a position and flat out came out and said, okay, I see you are the only Black faculty member in this department. I am white, but my spouse is Black, and we have two children. How are they going to be treated?
Mm-hmm.
I had to answer that question. And in Conway, Arkansas, I feel safe. I don't know how much of that has to do with the fact that I've navigated this space for such a long time that it's not a big, that these things aren't a big deal to me anymore. I don't know how someone who isn't from Arkansas would perceive this space. I hope that they would be safe. I hope that I could be positive in saying that Conway, Arkansas, being in central Arkansas, being in close proximity to Little Rock, is an acceptable space. We've got a significant Black population, but I'm saying all of this stuff being in the fishbowl myself. And I know that that's just one of the barriers that we have here in Arkansas getting here. So I'm not sure what the answer to that is, because as a university, we have to work with what we've got. We've got to work within the community that we're in. And I have on multiple occasions described the University of Arkansas being a purple campus in a purple community in a crimson red state. We have to work with that. Yeah. And that's something we can't fight.
I found that for, and I feel the same way about the state of Georgia that you do about Arkansas. It's like, you know, your reputation precedes you. and when folk come and interview, you know that they have some ideas about it, you know, and they're feeling some kind of way, even though they've decided to interview. I found that the biggest thing I can use to fight that over the years to try to get people to see beyond that is really working hard with the administration to make sure that when I say to people that we want you here, that becomes something that is not just being said by me, but something that they can feel when they go to other parts of the campus. And that's big for us. I mean, that means that you have to take on, from the president on down, making sure that everybody is behind you when you say this. And the good thing is, I feel like that's where things are at the University of Georgia now, literally from the president on down. But it was, you know, I mean, it took 33 years to get there. I worked at that from the time I got there. And to get the entire university to be able, even if they didn't know individually what they were going to do, to see that that was what the goal was huge, because we had this huge, I mean, you know, the University of Georgia was one of those places that had riots when the Black folk came. In fact, this week, on Wednesday, Mary Frances, it was sort of Mary Frances early day. She was the first Black graduate of the University of Georgia, and she's still alive. And, you know, we're talking about somebody who's living and breathing, who knew what it was like to go through all of that with the university and could feel the difference between then and now. But there are so many kids who still, when they come to the University of Georgia, and I talk to them as high schoolers, when they come to the university, still say that their parents, their grandparents told them, you can't go to that place because they don't want Black people there. So it just means that I have the work to do of making sure that when they walk out of there, they know this isn't your grandma's University of Georgia, and to also have the university behind me when I say it, which is, you know, a role for all of us as Black faculty. You don't want it, but you don't have a choice.
I think you all are touching on the enormity, right? The gravity of the number of issues that are impacting the situation. Just in our dialogue so far, we talked about recruitment, but also retention. And then even within the tiers of faculty, right? How many of your tenured faculty are Black faculty versus, let's say, your instructors, your adjuncts, your lecturers, those sorts of things. In talking about the undergraduate numbers, I know that is a trend nationwide where you're having greater undergraduate diversity. And so perhaps you all as teachers can talk about possible burden that plays on minority faculty when you are having increasing numbers of students that are perhaps looking to you as mentors and as guides. And is that a fair burden? How do you handle that? Is it just one possible component there? Anthony also touched on, intentionally here, but in using Don's textbook, how do you make sure you are using in your curricular materials different components that are rightly created by persons of color and ensuring that those are part of your curricular offerings? So many issues here. I'm not sure which one to go to next. I don't know if you all have one that you particularly want to focus in on, but I am all ears at this point.
I'll preface this by saying this is my perception, and my perception could be incorrect, but at least for Legal One, sometimes I've got to be diplomatic. I've got a lot of students who I don't have to sell DEI to them. I've got a lot of students who, for lack of a better way of putting it, they get it. They recognize that they're living in a diverse world and they want to know how to navigate it. They recognize that historically there have been people who have been treated unfairly and they want to remedy that. So for some students, they get it. And I guess that's the benefit, you know, that's one of the positive things that we can say about the generation that we're educating these days. That's not universal. And I haven't had too many students fight me on these ideas. And part of it may be because, you know, I'm the authority in the room and they just may not feel comfortable doing it, and that's fine. But certainly I know that being in an area where these ideas are not celebrated. And in fact, you know, getting back to some of the things we were talking about earlier, some folks are just openly hostile to them. I can't just come in and say diversity, yay, and my students accept that. So part of it has to be, for those who might be skeptical about it, how can I sell them? And I'll tell you that one of the things that I've learned, and believe me, a huge part of this has been thanks to conversations that I've had with other Black ALSB faculty members, has been there's been some point where you or someone else have been othered, where haven't been made to feel like you belong, or you feel like you don't belong, or whatever. So occasionally when I talk about employment law, I certainly bring in examples where Christians have been the plaintiffs in a lawsuit. I've brought in some examples where a white person has been the plaintiff in the lawsuit, because I have to sell to them that this idea of equity that we're talking about, this idea of belonging that we're talking about, it's, you know, it's not at the exclusion of those that are in the majority. It is at the inclusion of those in the majority, but at the inclusion of those who have traditionally not been in the room as well. I have to think about it in, at least in my mind, I have to think about it in those terms in order to sell it to an audience that contains members that might initially not be willing to buy into the idea. But if I don't have that in mind, at least I perceive that there's going to be some blowback there, just given the community that I'm in.
That has been my 42-year experience, right? Walking into a room of people who do not look like me, and I look like me, and their assumption is, well, of course you would say that. Why wouldn't you say that? You're Black. You're female, right? And I have to very quickly disabuse them of that notion and travel the road that you're talking about, where you do justice to the law and what the requirements are. And that's one of the beauties of employment law to me, because you're always dealing with the law, right? It's like, I ain't trying to convince you another. You want to get sued or you don't want to get sued, okay? I'm just trying to tell you how not to get sued. The work is, what I found is the work is with you in making sure that you do it. And I urge you to, you know, email me about this. But the work is to make sure that what it is that you do, that gets done. Because if you give it to them the right way, I don't know that I've ever had anybody that walked out rejecting it the way they thought they would when they walked in that door. In fact, it's been exactly the opposite, where students would say, you know, I grew up thinking that this was all the things that you said, all the negative things. And as it turns out, that's not what it is at all. And then they're pissed off because they feel like they've been somebody's been hiding something from them. Because, you know, I'm not trying to proselytize, I'm just trying to teach you the law. And as it turns out, they're mad that they didn't have the foundation for knowing that in the first place. So, and I, you know, I assume that for every room I walk into when I do consulting and stuff too, that I have to present it in a way that makes it resonate for them, not for me, but for them, knowing where they are so that they can take that in. And it usually is really, really successful. But I think that's part of what we bring to the academy. Because we see things a different way, we're able to not just deal with it in one way. You come in and you present the facts and that's that. I mean, we know, yes, everybody should have their taillights, but we know some people get killed when they don't have their taillights. And it's okay to say that, because that's the reality of the situation. And if we're going to deal with it, we need to know that. But at the same time, it would be nice not to have to have that burden, right? It would be nice not to have to think about, how can I say this in a way that would make it so you feel like it's acceptable and you're not going to give me pushback on it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll jump in. And one thing I want to do is acknowledge Aquisha Daniels, who was one of the founding, she was actually the driving force behind the creation of the ALSB Black Faculty section. This was her vision, and she follows in the footsteps of giants like Don and like several others. I didn't mention that I was the second African-American faculty member to be president of the ALSB. The first was Barbara George Crutchfield, who, Don, correct me if I'm wrong, I think she was president back in 73. And I think she had been elected the year before, but she was asked to wait a year because the annual meeting was going to be in a summer in a southern town. And the leadership of the organization didn't think that that would be taken well. And she was actually...
And she practically looked white. You know, whoa.
Yeah, she was she was very, her appearance was such that, as we often say, she could likely pass in many situations, but she embraced her African American heritage. and mm-hmm. she was very, very proud of it. Definitely a pioneer. So Aquisha follows in that vein. And one of the things that drove her to push for the section was the feeling that there was still a lot of work, a lot of work to be done. The ALSB has been a very welcoming and embracing organization, but it's not perfect. And she suffered through many microaggressions within the academy, people who would walk away when she attempted to join their conversations, and people who were not willing to reach out with her and say, hey, we have similar research ideas, let's do some work together.
When you say the academy, do you mean in general or the academy ALSB?
I am pointing my finger at the ALSB,
okay,
which has been my academic home and which I have enjoyed a lot of positive experiences. And I'm just saying that it's not universal.
Mm-hmm.
It has not been universal. And so we got to constantly be on guard there. And we need to have people who are comfortable talking to leadership and saying, hey, these are the issues of people who are not in the majority. And we need to serve all our members.
Yeah. And those people are going back into a courtroom, I mean, a classroom. So if they're treating their colleagues like that at something like, you know, some function, ALSB function, I can't imagine they're going to be a whole lot different in a classroom with students that don't look like them. And that's where all we're drawing the line.
And even just going over those stories, my experience with the ALSB has been similar to Robert's, which has been nothing but welcoming. Within my College of Business at UCA, my experience has been nothing but welcoming. But I've got colleagues on the other side of campus that have horror stories. You know, there are people who look like us in other fields who, if they're in their office at 8 p.m. Just doing their work, there's a chance they'll have a police call on them. Now, hopefully, campus police will say, okay, we know who you are, or they'll do a cursory investigation to acknowledge that this person has a right to be here. But there are people within our academy who have these stories.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I certainly have one of those stories. It is one of the dangers of being Black on a college campus, being Black in any sort of professional setting. You constantly have to prove that you belong. We don't have the privilege, regardless of how we were dressed or how we look, of just assuming that we'll be treated with the, not just respect, but lack of suspicion that members of the majority groups enjoy.
It's true. Sorry. Yeah.
So you all have shared a lot on kind of personal histories, history of kind of how the academy and the section got to be where it is, as well as some of your experiences in the classroom. I've heard a little bit and speaking with Robert on, you know, things like offering to publish, but perhaps we can transition a bit into colleagues and administration and how they can be better supporters of Black faculty and some of the challenges you're undergoing. Not that individuals should have to, right, craft their own solutions to their own oppressions, but realistically, we all know sometimes it is helpful to hear from people who have these personal experiences and have taken the leadership roles that you have taken as to what would you all like to see happening that you currently don't see happening, or perhaps some success stories where you have received some true allyship and what that looks like.
True allyship. I am like Anthony and Robert in the sense that I have not, that's a lie. I was going to say, I have not had any just really awful situations based on race. The truth is, that has happened to me. A big part of this, and I think this is important to say too, a big part of how you deal with that has to do with you, who you are in the world, and what you see your role as. for me, no one was going to stop me from doing what it became really clear to me that even though I didn't want to do it, didn't even know what it was what I was sent here to do, to Earth to do. And everything else became like just flies on an elephant. You know, it's just an irritation. I don't like it that you did it, but I'm not going to let it stop me. And I think coming into these spaces, that's one of the things we have to know. You know, I'm not faced with somebody calling me the N-word every time I turn around or students disrespecting me. And some of the horror stories that I've heard people say, I've never, never had that happen in the entire time that I've taught. But at the same time, there, I recognize that it does happen. And I recognize ways in which it has happened with me, and I have not allowed it to be something that defined who I was. And probably collaboration is a really good one, because the University of Georgia, the authors there were the ones who had the first legal environment textbook when they went from business law to legal environment. And the person who started it retired the year I came. And the people who took it on were still at the university in my department. And I started off doing for other people chapter end questions in textbooks. I did an ethics section for each chapter of somebody's textbook, as opposed to being a co-author on a textbook. And when the employment law opportunity came along, it never occurred to me, because I had never been asked to help them. It never occurred to me to ask them for help either. It was not something I felt safe to do. And I had been writing, I've been writing all my life, was on Law Review, had done articles and all of that, probably more than some of them had done, because I'd been teaching longer than some of them had. But yet I wasn't asked to be on a textbook. When it just so happens yesterday, I've been journaling since I was 11 years old, and I needed to find something, and I went looking in my journals for when I wrote the textbook. I kept a journal just on writing the employment law textbook. And one of the things that happened was that when the textbook came out, before it actually came out, it had started to break records already. And I had been trying to get this textbook for years, saying, you know, this is a really important thing for people to know. And they were like, doesn't work like that because there are no classes. You're teaching the only class. And I was like, but if you had the book, people would have the class. And that's exactly what happened. And when I looked at what the accolades were for that and thought about the fact that I essentially had been shut out of opportunities by my colleagues, I had a choice to make about whether I would let that define my relationship with them and my time there as an academic, or I would just take it and move on and say the universe gave you to have something to have on your own that you didn't need them for. And as I didn't like the idea, probably if you looked at my vita and looked at the articles, virtually all of them are solo authored. I was at the university in the department that had the premier business law people, and my stuff is solo authored. Y'all, I didn't have time in the day to worry about whether somebody wanted to publish with me or not. Okay. It was like, you do it, you need to do it. You know, you have to do it in order to get your tenure, promotion, whatever, do it. Did it feel good? No, it didn't, but it wasn't anything I wanted to concentrate on because I had bigger fish to fry. And for me, it didn't even leave a bitter taste because it just wasn't my focus. What we can do better is to bring people into those relationships, especially if they're junior people, knowing that they need other kinds of things on their resumes in order to get the benefits of being in academia. Ask them to help. And it doesn't, you know, when your name goes on there, I mean, everybody knows that the first one was the lead, but the truth is everybody that comes after that, nobody knows how much they did. And if you want to help somebody along, you can have them be a part of the work that you do. I didn't have anybody else that looked like me that I was willing to ask, and the rest of them were doing their own stuff anyway. So, you know, it was just me. But if I had somebody else, they would have been on everything that I did, because that's the biggest way we can help somebody who's in academia, because we know that that is what it is that's needed, those publications, those opportunities to present and stuff like that. But that energy, I just was not going to waste that, my energy on that kind of foolishness, because, you know, that's not what I was put here for me to, you know, worry about whether you wanted to have lunch with me today. And, you know, all of this is true, and then put female on top of it, because we're in a college of business, predominantly male. Okay, so they have issues about women in the first place. That's, y'all, I'm telling you, my nickname was Fuck, Don't Fuck with Dawn. And it was like, I don't even understand. What the version you see of me is what anybody ever got. I'm just a positive person. That's all I ever am. But what that came from was probably more the female part than it was the Black part. And that was, I assumed that if you asked my opinion, you wanted my opinion. And I was going to be honest with you about it. And it was not usually a negative opinion. But I'm in the South having an opinion, and you're a female. Whoa. And you act like you own that opinion. That's something we're not used to seeing. And somebody said to me in a meeting, he was leading a meeting one time, and he said something like, you sound like a bra burner. And I had not said anything that was out of the way. And I said, well, how do you know I wear a bra? And you know, he did not. And then I understood why they said, don't fuck with Dawn. Because that's what I was going to do. I mean, you gave it to me. What was I supposed to do with that? You know, sitting up in a meeting too? Oh, how disrespectful can you be? And I'm so sad to say that was somebody Black. So I think bringing others in and not giving energy to what you don't see, but being real clear about what it is your role is a part of how you rise above it. And at the same time, you try to use the resources that you have. Don't be afraid to ask either. If you need to have somebody who is with you on those papers that you know they do similar to yours, ask. All they can do is say no.
Don makes a whole lot of good points. The game is to write copiously. You don't get as much credit for writing books, but on the flip side, you probably get a much bigger impact because you're helping to train the next generation or next generations of students. I don't think I'm calling out your age, Don, saying that you probably taught more than one generation of students and maybe had children of some of your children of some of your students in subsequent classes. And you know, that is incredibly rewarding experience. But you're right, you have to take control of your career. You've got to, if you see somebody who's doing interesting work in your field, you've got to reach out to them. Some of these people, these prominent people, are introverted. They're not going to reach out to you. You got to go and grab them and say, hey, what do you think of my idea? Is this something we can do together? Or I just like your work. It's interesting. I don't have a particular idea right now, but let's chat. Maybe we'll come up with something. That's something that we can do. And the same token, our white majority colleagues should not be shy. I've heard too many of them say, well, I was afraid to talk. I thought she might get angry. That old angry Black woman trope. We're all familiar with it. We're real people. We really are not that different from you. So reach out, talk to people at conferences. If they're doing interesting things, or if you don't know what they're doing, just strike up a conversation. That's all we ask.
Especially when you go to sessions, you know, it used to be everybody was in all sessions. Now they have tracks. So you know when somebody is doing something that's close to what you're doing and you can target them, go to their paper, ask them about being able to collaborate.
Yeah, I heard a story today about one of the old time business law instructors here at Kelly. Lots of stories. And this person, I'll just say he's a total asshole. He would go to ALSB meetings and he would go to sessions and he would wear out the speaker for maybe having the audacity or making the error of not doing something that in his mind was sufficiently original. And when I heard that story, I said, you know, that's not what the ALSB is about. If you have a problem with some work somebody's doing, if the work looks flawed or it looks substandard, don't make a show of it in a session, but find them after the session and offer them some advice. Give them some constructive criticism. That's what black, white, brown, whatever, LGBTQ, that's what the ALSB has all been about. It's not like the other disciplines.
Yeah. They're very different, aren't they?
Oh, gosh. That's why I left economics. They eat their young. And I didn't want to spend my entire career in that kind of atmosphere.
Yeah.
You all have segued quite naturally and adeptly through many of the topics that I'd hoped to get to. I had never had any ambition to get to everything that needs to get to. These are huge issues, and as Don points out, a lot of these issues are intersectional issues as well. This is just a taste of some of the many issues that the Black faculty section and beyond are dealing with in the Academy, and we hope folks continue to engage in these issues as well. We might have time for a very quick kind of parting shot from folks. If there's one thing that we didn't get to, we'll have to keep it relatively brief for recording's sake. But is there, a word of wisdom, although we're getting that already, or just something, a big takeaway that perhaps each of you would like to share before we conclude today? And Anthony, we haven't heard from you in a bit. I don't know if you can kick us off with something you'd like to share.
Well, first, I appreciate that you took the time to have this interview with us. The origin story of this whole interview is that at last year's ALSB and the first meeting of the Black faculty section, in addition to having our first official section meeting, we did a panel on conversations involving the needs of faculty of color and friends. And it was a very good panel, but one of the things that I was disappointed that we didn't have time to do was get into sharing our stories. Because quite frankly, I think there is tremendous value in sharing those stories. And you know, I primarily approached you, Eric, to hopefully do this so that we could have a forum to start doing that. I'm going to use fear for lack of a better word. I am a Black person, and my experience as a Black person is not the in quotes Black experience. And people need to realize that. There are certain things that all Black people have in common. At the top of the list being having no control over how other people perceive us when we walk into the room for a first time. But beyond that, all of us have our approaches, all of us have our stories, all of us have our experiences. And I'm hopeful that this can be just another one of those data points out there regarding some of the experiences that various Black faculty members have had out there. So that's my endpoint. And Eric, again, thank you for recording this. Thank you for setting this up for us. And Don and Robert, thank you for your stories and also for accepting the invitation to be here as well. So thank you.
That is not an invitation we would ever have said no to. Was it, Robert? That just wouldn't have happened.
Absolutely not. You know,
absolutely wouldn't have happened.
We walk in the shoes of giants. Don, you were a mentor to me when I first came on board, and I hope I'm putting you there. I'm throwing that out there. I'm putting you on that pedestal, and you're not ready to be sent out the pasture yet. You're still vibrant, dynamic. But I look and hope that I can do the same for the generations that follow me. And looking at Anthony and Acrisha, I I'm very optimistic. I think we're leaving the Academy in good hands of really strong faculty of color. Eric, thank you so much for doing this. This is so useful. And I hope anyone who views this learns something and realizes that it is about allyship. And allies, true allies, are always welcome.
I love all of that. I would, and I agree. I mean, I am just, I cannot believe Aquisha got pulled into a dean's meeting and she was not able to be here. Oh my gosh, this is her baby, right? But I feel so good, like you, Robert, about the hands that the organization is going into now, because it's never had a lot of Black folks at any point in time, or a lot of people of color, period. But I like it that what this group seems to be doing is using what was already there and taking it to the next level. And that's awesome, because the truth is, that's how progress gets made. It usually isn't made all at once. It's step by step by step. And as we see, then you take some steps back and then you have to go back up again. So being able to build on what was already there and fine tune it, push it even further forward, I think is a really important piece. And I feel really good that the folks that are there are not only well positioned to do that, but they're willing to take it on. I think the fact that there's this section now shows that. Something that, you know, I don't know that I can ever remember that there was a call for it before, even the thought about it. I don't remember this ever happening. So it shows that it's working. And I also want to urge anybody who sees it, and it could be allies, it could be people who fit into the category of Black faculty, to realize how important it is to just really own the sense of who you are and where you are, that you are enough, and that what you bring to the table is unique and will be accepted. You start off with that thought, because people will usually follow you where you go. So if that's your thought walking in, that's usually what you're going to end up with. And that's part of what comes with the territory of being academics, especially in situations where we're not predominantly the ones in the room. So thank you so much, Eric, for doing this.
Great. Thank you again to guests today, Professors Bennett Alexander, Thomas, and McMullen. On my end, I will commit to reaching out to Aquisha Daniels. It sounds like she has a lot to share, and perhaps she can join us in a future recording of some sort, as this is not the end, but just another point along this journey. So thanks, everyone, again for your time.
Again, that concludes today's episode focusing on Black Faculty Experiences, episode 3.2 of ALSB's Pedagogy Podcast. Be sure and check out the detailed information on the episode for contact information on today's guests. You can also, if listening from Spotify, interact with a question if you want to tell us what you thought of today's episode, or of course, reach out to me directly, Eric Sater at easater@iu.edu, to tell me about what you thought, or to volunteer yourself to participate in a future episode in some regard. If interested in either captions through auto captioning or the video version of today's episode, that is also available in the detailed description. Thanks again for listening, and I hope to see you all, or I guess interact with you all, sometime here soon. Thanks so much.